I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome to the latest episode of the Championship Roundtable. I'm your host, Jake Jackman, and you can reach us at the show by emailing us championshiproundtable@gmail.com.
Hi, Paul Binning, at the Exiled Robin on Twitter, Bristol City fan and blogger.
I'm Matt Cutler, Aston Villa fan, sports journalist, and you can find me at Matty Cutler on Twitter.
Thanks so much for joining us today, guys. We'll start making the rounds where each of us have a few minutes to discuss what's been happening at our clubs this week. None of our teams have played this weekend, but there were matches in midweek, so we can start there. Paul, what were your thoughts on Bristol City's performance in the week, and what are your overall thoughts on how things are going? Because it's changed somewhat since you last came on. You've got a couple of good results.
We had a couple of results come our way. It was a funny one on the Tuesday night, Wednesday night, I can't remember which night. Tuesday night, I think it was. We were away at Leeds. Looking at the position of the two clubs in the table, didn't really expect anything out of the game, and we didn't get the result. But again, I guess I've said this quite a lot on these podcasts this season. We've seemed a bit unlucky. First goal was a blatant foul on our defender. I mean, a really, indisputable foul. It should have been a free kick. Second goal was a big deflection. And their goalkeeper was man of the match. So, on the face of that, it sounds really unlucky. But unfortunately, we seem to be really unlucky most weeks. It was first defeat in four. If you're looking at it glass half full, if you're looking at it glass half empty, we only beat Rotherham, who everyone beats. We threw away a three-goal lead at Derby and, did actually play not too badly at home to Sheffield Wednesday. So really difficult to gauge, I think, how our last four or five games have gone. Is it an upturn in form that's actually going to see us okay once we play some teams that aren't in the top six? Or is it just a sort of little flicker that's just showing we're not good enough? It's really, really tricky to work that out. And I think the next four or five games will be interesting for us. We've got some good challenges coming up, including trips to Newcastle and Villa in the next 10 days. And in and around that, though, we're home to Fulham and home to Burton, which really are really important matches for us to go and get something out of. And especially after Burton's win yesterday, that was an awful result for us, all of us down at the bottom.
I just want to ask you quickly on your January signings, because you made a few in January. Yeah. I just want to know your thoughts on those. Are there any that stand out?
They seem quite good in the main. I think Jans Hegler's come in from Germany. I must admit, never heard of him before. He's come in very assured, very composed, good footballer. He was a sort of centre midfielder, and we've seemed to have slotted him into that defensive midfield role. And he looks very, very strong, good quality player. And we got him a bit of a snip, apparently. Milan Djuric is coming up front. He's a big 6'6" Bosnian international striker. Scored against Wales in the qualifier if you follow the domestic sides before Euros. And, he looks a good option. I think, he's not necessarily going to be first choice this season with Tammy Abraham on loan. I'm sure I'll talk about him a little bit more later. But he looks a good option. He's a real handful. Holds the ball up well. And he caused problems on Tuesday night when he came on. Who else? Bailey Wright, we signed from Preston. Centre-half, he's come in. He's already been sort of made captain in the absence of two or three of our other possible captains. I think he looks quite assured as well. Added a little bit of organisation to the defence. But saying that, we're still conceding, on average, two goals every game. So something's still not right back there. The goalkeeper we signed, another German guy, looks a little bit dodgy at the moment. I guess, sometimes it does take time to adapt, as we saw. You see right at the top level, David De Gea, but he does look a little bit shaky at times. And I think he's the fifth goalkeeper we've tried this year. So hopefully he comes good. I know in the main, I think we've added well to our squad. We've got a strong squad. Compared to what we've had in the past, certainly it's a much stronger sort of first 15, 16 than we've had in the previous seasons we've gone down in the last 10 years, much, much stronger, and we really shouldn't be where we are. And I think, you know, top six earlier in the season when we were flying well was probably a little bit overboard, but we certainly aren't a bad enough side to be down at 20th, 21st position, and something needs to change to make that to happen.
Yeah, moving on to Villa now, Matt. Villa are an interesting one to me because you spent a lot of money and the signings that you've made are relatively good in my view.
Yeah, we spent an insane amount of money, and not just in the summer but also in the winter. Sorry, Matt, I'll cut you off then.
That's all right. I was just gonna say I thought it's weird because I think that you've got a good manager. The players you brought in are not they're championship players, and I've been thinking that you're the favourites to win the title next year. So it makes the last few results a bit weird. But I just want to know your thoughts on the situation.
Yeah. Well, how long have you got? it's interesting times at the moment, to say the least. We haven't had a game yet by the time this podcast goes out, but off the back of, you know, Valentine's Day massacre at home to, you know, losing at home to Barnsley, which, you know, my girlfriend wasn't happy sitting there on Valentine's Day sitting, you know, well, listening to the Barnsley game. So off the back of the Barnsley result, which, you know, we've lost how many in a row now? I think four in a row. Haven't won since Boxing Day, so it's not great times at all. And I have to say, I think it must be directly connected to the transfers, right, Jakey? I mean, you mentioned it just then. We've got so many new players coming in, so many good players, and I don't think bad players just become bad players overnight or, you know, over the course of a month. So it's got to be a case of fitting them in. I think Steve Bruce doesn't quite know what his starting 11 is, and not only does he not know his preferred starting 11, he doesn't know his preferred formation, so just messing about with all kinds of things, trying 5-3-2, trying a 4-4-2 with different sets of players. And so it's pretty difficult to, and particularly off the back of, you know, a bad result after a bad result, it's pretty hard to pick it up when it's not the same team week in, week out. So my kind of long answer to that is I don't really know what's happening, but I'm hoping that Steve Bruce is going to find out, if Steve Bruce isn't the manager, then who is the manager? You know, is the guy who has the credentials to take teams out of the Championship into the Premier League. And I'm sure he hasn't had a club like Villa before where he's had the ability to spend as much as he wants to spend on the players he wants to get in. So I'm hoping that he's going to work out his preferred formation, his preferred starting 11, and hopefully we'll go on a run of form. And if that doesn't happen, then I don't quite know what to think.
and Matt, I'll just ask you the same question that I asked Paul about the January signings, because I thought that Villa seemed like they knew a lot, like the players they were targeting were a lot better than the ones they were targeting in the summer. I thought Horahan was a particularly good signing, and the other guy from Barnsley as well. It seems like there's a little bit more sort of an approach to bring in Championship players with Scott Hogan as well. So how have they sort of settled in and have they made an impact?
Yeah, I think Hourihan's and Lansbury in particular, the two I think who look most comfortable about new signings. It's pretty hard to keep track on who's coming in and who's coming out. Hogan's played, he signed the day after, or sorry, the evening we lost to Brentford. So he obviously wasn't playing, but he's played, you know, it doesn't seem to be currently, well, you know, it's a bit harsh because he's only played like a couple of games or three games without a goal. So it's pretty harsh to kind of criticise him for that. Bjarnason's the one who's most interesting. Where he doesn't look fit for a start. Bjarnason, for anyone who don't know, is this midfielder we got from Basel. Everyone kind of remembers him from that game where Iceland beat England in the Euros. Good, obviously a good player, good experience, but came in. He came in from Basel. I think they have a winter break. I could be wrong about that. So I think he hadn't played football for a while. But I think the one disappointing one, particularly for, and I think a lot of Villa fans will agree with this, is Sam Johnstone. You know, he had a great first game when we had that cup game against Spurs away. Even though we lost, but he looked very solid. He just seems to. He's made a couple of gaffes. Given away, to be honest, a few direct goals that we would have, you know, either won games or at least drawn them had he played a little bit better. So he's the kind of disappointing one. But Again, kind of a long answer to say, I almost think it's a little bit too early to tell, really, until kind of Bruce finds out what his preferred starting 11 is.
Yeah, moving on to Newcastle now. We've only had one game this week as well. We've not played over the weekend. We got Villa tomorrow night. The game we played was against Norwich away from home. We started well, got the goal within the first minute, and from that point I thought we were gonna cling on to it, because we don't really give up leads away from home. We've only done it once this season, and that was at Villa Park, so I thought we would hold on and get another, you know, crucial 3 points, and it would have been very good, especially as, you know, Brighton drop points. But it wasn't to happen. It wasn't to be. We conceded two sloppy goals, really. The first one was a mistake from Lascelles. Just a couple of days after, I gave him a lot of praise last weekend for his performance against Wolves. He didn't have a great game. He was out-muscled a bit too easily by Cameron Jerome. And then it was sort of a simple finish for Murphy. And then just a few minutes later, Darlow made, I think most people have seen it by now, probably one of the worst goalkeeping errors I've ever seen. He just completely didn't kick the ball at all and just let Cameron Jerome go in and score. Well, it was probably the easiest goal of his career. I mean, there was a chance that Cameron Jerome could have missed that, because we know what he's like, but it was too easy for even him to miss. And we went 2-1 down. And from that point, I thought we might struggle, because Norwich were in good form. We're not very good when we go behind. I think we've only come back to win once this season. I don't think they're coming back to draw stuff to be much better than that either. So, but we played really well, and I think we had 20 shots to Norwich's 8. We hit the woodwork twice, had one cleared off the line, and then finally got back in the game through Lascelles, who scored a nice goal towards the end of the second half. And there was a couple of chances after that for us to go and win it, but we didn't take them. But for an overall performance, I think it was probably one of our better performances in recent weeks. But we just had those two mistakes, and you can't compensate for those. You know, if somebody scores a great goal against you for sort of 30 yards, you can't do anything about that. It's the same with a mistake. Everybody's going to make mistakes at some point. We were just unfortunate we had two in the same game. But to go away to Norwich, who were one of the form teams at the time, and get that result, it wasn't the worst result, especially as Brighton dropped points to Ipswich at home. I think that's probably a worse result than the one we got. We're now down to second because Brighton won yesterday, but we're still sitting pretty strong, I'd say. Leeds dropping points was a good thing for us. A lot of the teams play each other around us, so that picture at the top should become a lot clearer. I think Huddersfield are the only team I'm quite concerned about, and their result against City over the weekend, although it means they have to play an extra game, it will have given them a bit of a boost as well, and kept that momentum going. So be interesting to see what they do. I think they've got Reading on Tuesday, so that's going to be an interesting one at the top. But yeah, apart from that, there's not been too much going on at Newcastle. There's more talk about Benitez as there ever is. The Wenger stuff, he's been linked to Arsenal, but I don't think that's something that will happen. And today there's talk that he's already planning what he wants to do in the summer. So it's clear that there's still issues to be resolved, but it seems to be looking a lot better than it was a couple of weeks ago when there was talk of him resigning and things like that. So that is good news for us. But just to move into the topics for today, I just want to ask each of you about the managers at your club at the moment and sort of your views on them, because I know, Paul, you've talked about Johnson and sort of the mixed views within the fan base, and I'm sure there's similar views at Villa now with Steve, especially as he's a former Birmingham manager. So we'll start with you, Paul, and just talk us through your views on Johnson at the moment and what you think can happen.
Yeah, I think, you know, not huge amounts changed, I guess, since I think last time I was on. I think, you know, it's been slowly an increasing groundswell of people wanting him out. I think most feel he's not up to it at this level or not experienced enough yet. You know, he may well become a good manager, and he's apparently talked about quite highly in terms of his coaching ability and how he organises stuff. But I think the main issue, and we've seen it even in we talked earlier about the upturn in form, we're still conceding lots of goals, and that's what we've been doing it all season, and it doesn't look like anything's changing, if that makes sense. I don't understand how they're not thinking about organising themselves differently or doing different work off the ball or whatever it might be. It just doesn't seem to improve whoever we've got playing and whatever sort of formation we play. And I think we're not bad on the ball. We've been certainly better the last four or five games on the ball. We've pressed forward more. I mean, the first 50, 55 minutes at Derby. And I didn't go, but my mum and dad go everywhere. My dad said it was the best he'd seen us play in years. I mean, it was that good. We were awesome there, apparently, and played some superb football. And then we just lost it again, you know. And when we're off the ball, we don't seem to be able to organise ourselves to defend. We don't seem to know what to do. And if we don't put enough players back, we get caught short. If we get too many players back, they stand on each other's toes and cause themselves problems. It's really, yeah. Ultimately, how long can you give a manager if he's not sorting that sort of major issue out? I think, you know, almost forget results to a certain extent. If he's not doing the basics on the training ground and he's not got the coaching staff in place to improve that sort of organisation, it's, you know, even if we had an upturn in results now, unless he changes that's never going to change, is it? And I think that's part of the issue a lot of people have got, is they just don't see anything changing, even if we have a little run of results, even have a few wins or whatever. It's, you know, how is that going to be any different going forward? He doesn't seem to have any inclination to change the way we do things for one reason or another.
Yeah, I've just looked at the table quickly, and it doesn't look great for Bristol City. I didn't think you were in that bad of a position as the one you were in, especially as you started the season so well, but I guess that run of results has gone against you. Do you think the relegation is a real possibility? I mean, Wigan are the team that I'd be concerned about out of the teams in that relegation zone.
Yeah, Wigan are certainly ones I talked about last week, but then Burton go and beat Norwich at weekend, and, you know, they're suddenly within, I'm not sure, a point or two of us. And, you know, at no point this season have I really thought we're going to go down. I said, I think we've got too good a team to go down. We've got goals in us. We are scoring goals. We've got some pacey attacking midfielders when we choose to use them and play in that way. But we're not picking up enough points. You know, I think the last 15 games we've got 8 points or something like that. And, you know, there's been a slight uptick in that in the last couple of weeks, but nothing. Say, take out Rotherham, one out of that is almost an outlier. You know, if you want to look at statistics like that, but it's you know, you just don't see where the wins are coming from. But yeah, who knows? Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe we'll go up to St James's next weekend and win, and go to Villa Park and win, and suddenly, you know, two wins and we'll be in a much, much better position. It's a funny league, and you never know what might happen.
That wouldn't surprise me if that did happen. Just quickly before we move on to Villa, what would it take for Johnson to lose his job? Do you think it would be falling into that bottom three? Do you think that is where sort of the line would be drawn?
Well, yeah, I think that's a big question. I think there's a lot of the more disillusioned fans are kind of resigned to the fact now that he's going to stay whatever and he's going to take us down. And because Steve Lansdowne, the owner, he is a friend of the Johnson family, still in touch with Gary Johnson. He liked Lee and got on well with Lee when he was here. And I think a lot of fans think he's just going to stick with him, whatever. And I really can't see that. He made a statement about 3 or 4 weeks ago about getting behind the club and everyone's working together, all this sort of usual stuff you hear. It wasn't quite a vote of confidence. He didn't name Johnson specifically, which I thought was really interesting. I think probably not to put that pressure on him. But there was a line he said in it, which was about, I've put a lot of money into this football club and I will protect my investment, which just made me think, well, that's the line that, you know, if we look like we're going down, he there's no way he'll want us to go down. There's no way he'll just let that happen by not doing anything. And I think, yeah, you wonder, even a home game against Villa, against Fulham this week, ahead of those two big away games, you think if we lose that with those two away games up ahead, you think, crikey, we are in real strife. And yeah, difficult one. I think he would act if it carried on much longer. I really do.
Yeah, and Matt, moving on to Villa now, what are the sort of current views on Steve Bruce? Because, I mean, the run of defeats don't look good, and it's connections with Birmingham as well, I guess. With some supporters, not all that would have a bearing. Do you think that if he loses against Newcastle, do you think the pressure will build?
I think unless we kind of go into some serious relegation strife, it's fine until the end of the season. You get a few, you know, there's a few fans, you know, on social media, on phone-ins and things like that, saying that maybe it's time for another manager. But I just go back to something I said earlier. If Steve Bruce isn't the right manager for Villa, then who is? I mean, I think the Birmingham link's not a big one, particularly only because he hasn't come from there directly, and there's plenty of time since that happened. So I don't think that's anything anyone's holding it against him. And I just think it's a little bit too hasty to think about sacking him, even though, you know, we're on a pretty dreadful run of form. And, you know, once, and again, kind of going back to what I said before, once he's got this settled formation, the settled starting 11, I mean, if that doesn't work, then yeah, I think it's in serious trouble. But surely the only way can be up from here, although that's famous last words.
Yeah, but when I look at Villa, I think I said it either last week or the week before that I thought the Villa were the overwhelming favourites to win the championship next season, based on the signings they've made and Steve Bruce being there for an extra season and having the pre-season. Do you think that maybe the next sort of few months should be used for him to find what his best team is, find any weaknesses, and then just build up a little bit of confidence to finish the season on, and then next season that's the place to go? Because I think it would take someone remarkable to get to the playoffs this season.
Yeah, no, I 100% agree with you. I mean, playoffs now, I think, are way too far off. I think we're, you know, I don't know, the championship is relatively compact, but we're still, I think, we're too many points, I think 12 points off the playoffs at the moment, even though we've got a couple of games in hand. So I think we do need to be looking at next season. But I don't think it's any gimme that Villa are going to be one of the favourites to get promoted next season. There's a few factors with that. You know, one is the financial thing, because the teams coming down this season get way bigger parachute payments from the new broadcast deal, which means that they're, you know, by definition, they can spend way more cash on players. Villa, you know, Tony Gia has come in and already spent, you know, I hate to think how much, it's got to be a championship record for how much money has been spent on a team, both in the summer transfer window and the January one. But I do agree with you. I think we've got a solid squad of championship players that should be, you know, threatening at the top end for sure. It's just gotta try and find out what that team is that will get us promotion next season. I think you're right.
Yeah, and moving on to Newcastle briefly, I discussed with Benitez's tactics a bit last week, but I think the thing that he's done the best of all since he's come in is uniting the club. I mean, I said it before, I'll say it again. The club is in such a great position at the moment. So the match against Derby, the home fans are great. There was flags, a great atmosphere, and it hasn't been like that at Newcastle for a long time. They talk about the atmosphere at Newcastle, but the truth is it hasn't been great at St James Park. It's pretty easy to quieten the crowd before. But Benitez, and it has been like that a few times this season, but Benitez came out before the Derby game. It was around the time that sort of all the stories were coming up about his future. And he said that we need the fans behind us if we're gonna go and win promotion. And the fans responded. And a lot of managers can't do that with their fan bases. Like Benitez has the Newcastle fan base exactly where he wants them, and it's a good thing. I think it's a great thing, because the fans are one of probably Newcastle's greatest assets, and if used correctly, then we can do things. The thing he's done well is played the politics. Mike Ashley there was always going to be problems between Benitez and Ashley. He's not an easy person to work for, but he is using the fans to strengthen his own case, and it will get to the point if the atmosphere is like that every single week at St James Park, and the away fans are like they normally are, then that's only going to lead to Benitez getting what he wants in the summer. Because he's done a lot of things, but he can't not give Benitez what he wants. The risk of losing Benitez, if we got promoted and we lost Benitez, I think we would be back in the championship within a year, and then we wouldn't be able to get back up after that. Because we see Norwich and Villa, the struggles they've had, and it's not easy to do what Benitez has done at Newcastle. You could talk about the money, you could talk about the stadium, the size of the club, whatever, but it's not easy to get a team to the top of the championship straight after relegation. Any other championship season, I would say Brighton would be running away with this league. And I think a lot of people would agree with that. I think they are probably one of the best championship teams in recent years. And the fact that Newcastle are keeping up with them, and not only keeping up with them, but ahead of them, just shows what a great job Benitez has done. I can't speak well enough of that man. He's done a great job, and anyone who thinks that he should have done better, like certain owners of football clubs, they are wrong. But we'll move on to
do you think there's a danger, Jake, that bear in mind you've now come down twice in 8-10 years and gone straight back up as sort of well, possibly gone straight back up as champions both times. There's danger that your fan base almost becomes a bit blasé about that and thinks, oh, it doesn't matter if we go down, we'll come straight back up.
I think it's true of some sections of the fan base. I think all fan bases have different sections of support. You know, the people that come on Twitter after a loss or a draw and say that, just use the Newcastle as an example, that we're not going to go up. I mean, that's crazy. But I think most of them are realistic. I think the thing about the relegation last season was if we hadn't have kept Benitez, a lot of supporters sort of had it with Newcastle. They weren't going to pay to go away. They weren't going to pay to go to all the games. It's a lot of the sort of prominent fan accounts on Twitter and sort of blogs and things saying similar things, and it's Benitez that has kept them with the club. So I think if we did it again, I think that we wouldn't go back up. But there's some Newcastle fans that just think we should be running away at the championship this season, and they come out after every defeat and sort of pour scorn on what's been going on. But I mean, I think on the whole, Newcastle fans are realistic. We I don't think we expected to run away of the league at all this season, or at least the majority. But yeah, I'll just moving on to the next topic, something I've been wanting to talk about for a couple of weeks now, and we just not got around to it. It's the TV, sort of the media coverage of the championship. It's something that I've noticed that it's not that well covered. I mean, having teams like Villa and Newcastle, they're covered, I mean, quite well still, mainly because of, you know, how big they are in their local area. But overall, I think the league is sort of undervalued and it's not covered too well. The programme on Channel 5 isn't great. Live coverage on Sky is a million miles behind what it is for the Premier League. I just want to know what you think of the coverage and what changes you'd make in the future. Is it because there's been people who've come on it before. I can't quite remember who it was, but they've talked about how they think that it could potentially become Premier League 2 in the future, which would probably be the most awful thing to happen to it, but or the greatest thing to happen to it, depending on what you want from the league. But just want to know your thoughts on how it's covered and sort of what changes you'd like to see implemented.
I guess for me, it might be a slightly different angle as opposed to a, you know, Newcastle Villa fan who used to the coverage of getting a Premier League. I think we've got to remember it's the second league in the country, and I think we probably get as good coverage as any second league anywhere in Europe. But when I talk coverage, I'm talking live games. I think you're right. I think, you know, it's very much Sky second string. You can see that with what we have in terms of presenters and people there. I think what is really missing is that insight more. So you get games, great, but you don't get the insight. You don't get, you know, it'd be nice to have a sort of magazine type show on, you know, before and after weekend, and then maybe there is one and I miss it, I don't know, but nothing stands out for me. A chance to really get into it more and talk to the clubs. But yeah, having been in League One, the Championship's not bad at all, I can tell you that. It's you know, you do really, really not get anything in League One other than the odd live match. And you know, you come up to a Championship, we get 5-6 games this year probably, and yeah, I just say, I think you don't get that. You don't get any detailed look. You don't get a review of a promotion race or a focus on the 6 teams down the bottom or anything like that. But you maybe do get on 5 Live. I think 5 Live are quite good at trying to do it. But even then, more and more focused on the Premier League, you know, understandably. But they do have, the guys, you know, can talk about a football league. And whether you like him or loathe him, you get someone like Steve Claridge on the TV and the radio. He does know his stuff. He knows his clubs. He knows people in the game. He knows what people are about. And you don't get the sort of semi-educated, you know, probably Twitter researched commentators you do on some of the Sky stuff. So, yeah, for me, not too bad. I can understand what you're trying to say in terms of it doesn't get a lot of coverage, but it is the second tier.
Yeah, Matt, I guess you're going to have some interesting thoughts on the media coverage, considering sort of your background in sports business, journalism, things like that. What do you think of the coverage compared to the Premier League? And what do you think of the sort of some people thinking it could become like a Premier League 2 in the future? Because a lot of the clubs in the Championship have played in the Premier League, so there is an opportunity to do something like that, I guess. Whether it would be popular or not, it's another thing.
Yeah, I was a bit like what Paul said. I think it's great. I don't think I've known a time where Villa are on TV more than they are at the moment. So it's great for me. In all seriousness, I guess it just comes down to an interesting. I mean, at least you know, with the Premier League, people who aren't fans of the two teams are playing probably tune in because it's the Premier League, because of the attention it gets, because of the quality of football, because of the superstars in it, because of the media coverage around it, just gets so much buzz that people are drawn in. Yet Championship games, I could be completely wrong about this, but my instinct is that people who are just fans of the teams get watch them, and hence why Villa and Newcastle get shown more is because of their big fan bases. And that gets the good audiences. I have covered this area. My understanding is, there you go, is an exclusive for your podcast, that the Football League is looking to try and give an offering where across the Football League you can watch the games streamed live through through a club subscription. Mm. So outside of the matches that are on TV, I know that's definitely something they're looking at. That comes with all kinds of issues, like, well, illegal streaming for one. But it's just a reaction to demand that people want to watch their own games and not necessarily other ones in the Championship.
I think that links a little bit, actually, Matt. I think when we talk to each other on Twitter, as we do, we're all very much avid football fans. And I think we would, you know, I would sit and watch, you know, I picture doing Fulham v Blackburn on a Friday night if I was in. You know, I wouldn't maybe go out of my way, but I would sit and watch it because I'm a big football fan. But I saw, I think it's sort of semi-linked, I saw a guy who used to produce Match of the Day on Twitter the other week talking about Man United always being on the FA Cup on the screen. And it's become a bit of a long-standing joke. And he made a really good point. He said, Sky get 800,000, 900,000 viewers. So, yes, you see them every week if you've got Sky and if you watch football. They get 8 million when they put them on BBC. Because it's about 7 million people who don't normally get a chance to see Man United play. And I thought, that's a fair argument. I can see that. And then, unfortunately, they simply wouldn't get anything like those viewing figures if they put, pick a tie, who's played, you know, two Championship clubs playing each other on in the Cup. It just wouldn't happen, as much as it might look like an appealing one. I can sort of see it. There's a wider public out there, the guys that do only watch an hour of football a week on Match of the Day, who actually want to see the big clubs all the time. And it's the same in the Championship, obviously. It's Newcastle, Villa, Leeds. I can understand, although it's a bit frustrating at times and you get a bit of a chip on our shoulder about it, but you can understand why they do it, because it's all about advertising and it's all about viewers, and that's why they do it.
Yeah, definitely. And there's another element here where... and I think maybe we're kind of the wrong generation to be talking about this, you know, because we are football fans and we're used to watching Match of the Day and we're used to watching even games on Sky. But, you know, kids these days, you know, and I'm in my 30s now, so I can, you know, it makes me feel old saying this, but kids, you know, they don't consume media in the way that we do. You know, they barely even watch full football games.
No.
And so they're thinking, you know, all these kind of organisations like the Premier League, like the EFL, they're having to think differently about it. It's not just a case of, you know, showing more football games or whatever. They've got to think about how they can do it. Is it about showing clips of things? Is it about, you know, all types of different things? You know, there was this may not be of interest to the whole listenership, but the commissioner of the NBA said a couple of months ago that he was considering this a subscription for basketball fans where you'd only get the last 5 minutes of the game, because that's the exciting bit. And that's the way they think, actually, you know, kids don't care about the first kind of, you know, hour and a half of the match. They just want to see it when it starts getting exciting. So I think there's also an element to that. And there's no easy answer, unfortunately.
Yeah, to go off that, I guess a good example of something similar with the Championship is the midweek goal shows they do on Sky. They, you know, the soccer Saturdays or soccer specials, whatever you want to call them, they show just the goals for the Championship. So they keep a track of the games, but they show the goals as soon as they go in. And it's programs like that could become maybe more, you know, normal in the future, rather than just watching four matches. One thing I want to mention about what Newcastle have done quite well this season, only over the last few weeks, but they have done it, and I think it's a good thing that maybe all Football League clubs or Championship clubs especially should try and implement, is to upload the whole 90 minutes after a game. I'm not sure how many clubs do this. I know Fulham do it because Ross, who comes on a lot, has spoken about it. But I think that's a really good thing to do because the Championship is a difficult league to follow, to sort of watch every game if you're not, you know, local or things like that. And I know there's a lot of fans in America for certain clubs. There's a lot of fans, even in the Championship. And I think something like that is good. And maybe that should become, you know,
I think that, again, that's maybe a Newcastle thing, Jake, I think, rather than general, potentially. I mean, I know we've tried a couple of times and done the 90 minutes thing. And I know the listening figures for one of the games we put on recently were, well, I'm not going to say the number because I might not be allowed to say the number, but it was unbelievably low. And I think it's certainly sort of, I mean, if you pick the right game, if you pick a thriller or a, you know, great comeback win or something, you might get more listeners. Again, I think a lot of the clubs, if you want to go, you go. I think that, yeah, there's always going to be pockets of fans who live away or do whatever, you know, can't go for some reason. But I think one thing as well on this, I think the clubs with social media are becoming more and more active. And I think that's almost what's needed because, yeah, I don't really want to great respect. I don't want Fulham and Blackburn and Huddersfield and anyone else are up to particularly. I sort of see a little bit and, you know, I get what I see. But if your club's doing more, I know Bristol City has started doing a lot more around Facebook Live. So they announced, I can't believe I didn't mention this one earlier, Matty Taylor signing on transfer deadline day. They announced on Facebook Live and had a reach of over 2 million in the space of 2 days, which is just phenomenal for something news out of our club and just shows, I think, that, you know, it was live on Facebook before anything else, the video revealing his medical and him in the dressing room. And that sort of thing is, I think, where the clubs really are going to spend a lot more of their time focusing on, much more of their internal media time focusing on that sort of social media video live type stuff, which really does then add some value into your club and your, you know, the insight into what they're doing.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Yeah, there's a lot of good points made by both of you there. It's interesting. I guess my view sort of centre more on a Premier League thinking, and I don't sort of consider some of the other clubs in the league. But it's definitely it's going to be interesting to see how it develops in football as a whole, not just in the Championship. I see Facebook are going to start streaming Spanish games. You know, it's going to be interesting to see where it goes and whether maybe TV channels will become obsolete in the some point. I mean, it's possible, but we'll move on to player watch now. I just want to ask each of you a player that played well and disappointed in your club's most recent fixture. This normally works better when you have had a weekend game, but we'll talk about the week game, as that seems to be the most recent one for all of us. So we'll start with you, Paul, who sort of impressed and disappointed in your match against Leeds.
Cool. So it was a bit of a funny performance, in a way. We didn't feel like we played that well or that badly. It was all a bit middling and a bit nothingy. And until Leeds sort of got two up and sat back a little bit, we then got some pressure on. Who played well? I think Matty Taylor signed and said he's added some real tenacity up front that we probably haven't had this season with Tomlin and Tammy Abraham mainly up front. I think Tammy's done a fantastic job, obviously knocking in the goals, but it, you know, isn't necessarily that terrier type forward to go and harass defenders and cause them problems. I think he came on after about half an hour when Tammy actually went off injured, Matt Taylor, and you know, just got around the defence a bit and put them under some pressure. I think Hegler again in midfield had a good game. I think no one had a particularly bad game, I wouldn't say. I don't think, you know, you could maybe point at the centre backs for one or two of their goals, but I say one was a foul and the other one was a deflection, so a bit unlucky as well. Certainly on Just go back a few days, the weekend game. I know we not touching on that a huge amount, but all three goals came down our wings, and we've, you know, I think everyone at the club knew we had to sign at least one fullback, if not for both sides in the January window, and we signed 5-6 other players. Didn't seem to address the fullback position at all, which is where we've been weak all season. I think it's just another sign that maybe the manager and the staff aren't quite aware of where some of the deficiencies are, and that was really disappointing. Having gone three up, and an obvious position was being attacked down our left back in particular, Scott Goldbourn. And we just didn't change anything. We didn't tuck anyone in to help him out. We didn't make him sit 10 yards back. We just didn't do anything about it to stop it happening. And unfortunately, obviously culminated in us losing a 3-goal lead and only picking up a point.
Yeah, and Matt, who's sort of impressed or disappointed mainly, I guess, in your defeat against Barnsley?
Plenty disappointed, as you can probably imagine. I think it's it'd be interesting to hear Paul's view. Jonathan Codger obviously went to the African Cup of Nations for kind of 2 or 3 weeks. So obviously, you know, we were going to miss him. He's come back. He's scored. He's scored a couple of goals. Scored a couple of, you know, really good goals. And so he's, you know, he's there. He's always going to be a threat. He just misses a shed load of chances. Did he do that?
Yeah.
Does that ring any bells, Paul?
Yeah, I can't remember if it was on this podcast or on a blog preview at the start of the season, but I said, you know, he genuinely could have scored 40 or 50 goals last year without a shadow of a doubt. You know, the number of chances he missed was unbelievable, and he still scored 20-odd. I was going to ask, is he playing up front for you or out wide? How's he shaping in?
He started off out wide, but then I can't remember when he signed for us, whether that was under Di Matteo, but he started off at wide, and now he kind of is either played up top on his own in a kind of with almost two wingers next to him, now he's playing up front with Hogan in a kind of 4-4-2 in the last couple of games. I think that he's got a good partnership with Albert Adoma, Adoma's one of the players who's, you know, having a bit of a run in the team. You know, came from Middlesbrough, a good championship pedigree.
Yeah, he was great for us as well.
Great. I was a little bit sceptical about him at first, but now I think when he gets into a bit of a groove, and he played really well against Barnsley. You know, well, I know we lost 3-1 at home, but he was he looks dangerous. And if he, you know, I guess if he can whip in enough crosses and enough kind of slide rule passes to Codger, then he's going to convert.
Yeah,
some of them. Hopefully,
if he can stay onside, he used to get offside quite a lot last year as well.
So I guess that those two I'd pick out playing well anyway.
And
for Newcastle, easy to pick out the two that disappointed this week, although there are caveats to both. I mean we lost that game because of two errors, and they came from Jamal Lascelles and Carl Darlow, so it's easy for me to pick those two out. I think Lascelles scored the equaliser, so redeemed himself. What Bez's overall performance was not great. And then Carl Darlow has been excellent all season, but made that one mistake, which looked horrendous. So it's difficult not to pick him out as somebody at this point. Although I will say, I don't think that it was entirely his fault that we drew the game, and maybe we should... of course it was his fault, but I mean, like, we shouldn't criticise him and get ahead of ourselves too much, because he's played so well for postseason, and we got the people talking about dropping him already, which seems ridiculous. He made a mistake. Every keeper does it every now and again. Get behind him. He's probably our only keeper that could become our number one in the long term. So just let him keep going at it, and I'm sure he's learned a lot from it, even if it did cost us a couple of points. But played well. DeAndre Yedlin was probably our best performer. When we signed him, I was a bit sceptical. Mainly because, from what I heard about him at Spurs, I know Kevin, who hosts the Premier League show, was talking to me around the time about how when he went to Spurs, the players just didn't know why he was there. They thought he's sort of like a lottery winner, and what he was doing at a football club like Spurs. Like, if you want a raffle to train with Spurs for a day, that was the type of player Yedlin was. And he literally had no understanding of sort of the tactical sides and things like that. So it's been interesting to see how much he's developed since then, because for me, I'd say he's probably one of the best fullbacks in the Championship, if not the best on his day. He offers a lot of attack going forward. He's got ridiculous pace, which I guess is probably why he's a professional footballer in the first place, for his athleticism. And his final ball's got a lot better. He gets a lot of assists, a lot of goals and things like that. Well, not goals, but a lot of assists. He creates a lot of chances. All our play goes down our right-hand side, and his sort of influence in that is incredible. He's very good against Norwich, unplayable at times. And it shows the added value that Benitez can have as a coach. He can make a player, you know, he can add that tactical side. He can add, sort of make them better mentally and use their attributes to make them the best player possible. And that is exactly why having a manager like Benitez carries so much weight, because he will improve players, and Yedlin is a testament to that. I think if we go up next season, he will be absolutely fine in the Premier League. And maybe last season with Sunderland, he was not that great. So it's been interesting to see how he's developed, and hopefully that can continue. But before we wrap up today, I just want to quickly preview our matches in the week. I guess we're catching up on the games that we missed. So we'll start with you, Paul, and Fulham at home. How do you see that one going?
Yeah, so Fulham, the game we were supposed to be playing this weekend, so we arranged it pretty quickly. I think quite clever by the club as well. We had a run of four away games otherwise at Derby, Leeds, Newcastle, Villa. So to slot a home game in theory, should work for us. I think, yeah, we've got a chance. We're not losing games in a big way. They're obviously doing well, but probably our performance of the season until last weekend was at Fulham in September. We absolutely destroyed them and won 4-0 at Craven Cottage, and everything looked rosy at that point. And I think you saw today a little bit. We pressed them down the flanks with pace that day and really attacked their fullbacks who do like to get forward. And if you know, watch them against Spurs today, I mean, they had a similar issue actually. The fullbacks were getting a bit lost in where we should be on the pitch. So hopefully we can take similar sort of tactics in, and we desperately, desperately need a win. We really do. So I wouldn't be predicting that. I think one in whatever it is, 12, 15 games, but we do desperately need it.
Yeah, and then tomorrow night it's Newcastle against Aston Villa. So me and Matt coming head-to-head in this one. I will start off with this. I think that... If you're looking at the form book and everything else that to look at the season stats and whatnot, Newcastle should be winning this game. We've won one of the best forms in the league at the moment. I think we've won three and drawn two of our last five matches, which isn't bad by all accounts. And the two draws probably should have been wins. So it's, you know, we had a poor period around Christmas, and we've now come out of that and we're playing really well again. And I think it's going to be the first... this the last 3 weeks, but I'm pretty sure this week I will be right. It's going to be the first time Dwight Gayle and Georgia Shelby started since December, or maybe a little bit earlier than that, and we've not lost a game when both of them have started since August. So we were in great form when they were both on the pitch, and then Shelby got his ban, Gayle got his injury, but Dwight Gayle is an probably the best, one of the best Championship strikers in recent years. He did well at Peterborough. Yeah, had a good goal record with them. Has done even better with Newcastle, which I guess is to be understandable, considering he's more experienced and Newcastle are a bigger team, or you know, a better team than Peterborough were when they were in the Championship. So I think that his return, I think he'll call. I'm sure the Villa defence aren't going to be full of confidence. So Gayle's movement and Shelby's sort of creativity should be enough to get us a win. I think Gayle will probably score in this one. But there's also the thinking that Aston Villa can't keep losing games. Like, I think their team is too good to keep losing. If they can't get up for a game at St. James's Park, like, what are they going to get up for? It's the type of game that could sort of, you know, bring everyone back together. And Steve Bruce would definitely be up for it, considering, you know, he's in Geordie and things like that. So I think we should win on paper, but... because football is what football is, I can see Villa getting something from this game as well. So I'll predict a win, but it's not a confident prediction. What are your thoughts on the game, Matt?
Yeah, I'd tend to agree with you. I think you've got to be favourites going into that, and you've got to be wanting to beat Villa at home, considering how bad we've been away from home in the past, kind of two months or so. One of the things that, you know, I agree with you completely. I mean, Shelvey and Gale, you know, they pose a real threat to us, particularly Gale. I mean, I wish Villa had signed Gale. When Newcastle did, he would have been the perfect striker for us. Our defence, you know, sounds like a strange thing to say, but our defence, you know, is doing okay at the moment. I mean, as I say that out loud, I feel ridiculous, because, you know, we, you know, how bad we've been. So I think they should be able to put up with his threat. I think he'll definitely get loads of chances. He'll have to take his chances for sure. One of the things I didn't mention before is Jedinak is a player we've really missed when he's been out injured for about a month or so. He's been a real loss for us because he's been that, you know, that central defensive midfielder who Shelvey, you know, if he's not playing, and he's 50-50 apparently at the moment. That's what Bruce said in his last press conference. If he's playing, it'll be a massive boost to Villa, because he will be able to break down the play a little bit and deal with, you know, the threat of Shelvey going forward at least. And you're right, you know, it's the hope that kills you, isn't it? But you've got to hope that Villa do pull a bit of form together. It's got to start somewhere. But if I had to put a gun to my head, or I had to put my mortgage on something, it would be a narrow Newcastle win.
And with that win out of time for today's episode, so if you guys just want to tell people we're going to reach you or any projects you're involved in, now would be a good time.
I am Paul Binning, Bristol City fan and blogger. I'm at The Exiled Robin on Twitter.
And yeah, you can get me at Matty Cutler on Twitter. I also run a podcast about the business of sport. Hopefully my voice is a little bit more clearer on that, which is called SB Weekly, and you can find that at SB Weekly Podcast.
Yeah, you can get my Twitter at Jake Jackman with two N's. I work for EPL Index and The Boot Room. But just want to thank Matt and Paul both for coming on today. It's been a good show, and we hope you guys keep listening.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.